Thank you for tuning in to the Ira Kaufman Podcast, all things Bucks, all kinds of different things NFL. It's the custodian of Canton himself, Tampa Bay's only Hall of Fame voter, on his twice-weekly podcasts every Tuesday and Thursday. And, of course, the podcasts do not exist. We are not here if it's not for Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. Ed Morse is challenging all other dealers to give you the lowest prices of the summer. Over at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, General Manager Brian Danahy is knocking out the competition during the Ed Morse Summer Sales Challenge. Right now, take advantage of the summer's best offers like the iconic 2017 CTS sedan lease for just $409. Get the best prices of the summer at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, just west of 275 on Fletcher, or click edmorsecadillactampa.com. See dealer for all the details, every last one of them. And don't forget Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com is the place to start your car shopping search. The Summer Sales Challenge is still going strong there. General Manager Mark Walmsley also is knocking out the other dealers with low prices on new Cadillacs. Get a 2017 ATS $349 a month or a 2017 XT5 $389 a month. The Summer Sales Challenge is on. Visit EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com. See dealer for all the details. And we'll talk more about Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. But we appreciate them and we appreciate you. And without further ado, let's head over to the podcast and Mr. Ira Kaufman. Reporting day is here on the Ira Kaufman Podcast. The clock is no longer ticking, Ira. We have made it to training camp. The players report back today, Friday, tomorrow. They're on the field at One Buck Palace. We are so fired up. The only thing we're more fired up about is all those great offers we just heard about from Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. Now they've been sponsoring you and presenting you work for more than 1 year, Ira. What faith? And, you know, they've had great return. A lot of people are excited about Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. They're visiting EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com, EdMorseCadillacTampa.com. Pumped up, man. We're here.
They are responsible for three-quarters of my wardrobe in my closet over there, Lee. And a couple of hats to boot and more promised on the way by Mr. Isbett. Boy, it's been a great relationship with the Ed Morse people. I've met them. Great people. They'll work with you. Steve's been talking about their deals for a full year. We know people, stick carriers themselves, that are on their way to Ed Morse. They've already been there or they're on their way to purchase new vehicles, lease new vehicles. I think it's been a good relationship all the way around, Steve.
So what you're saying is the stick carriers are not the demographic some people may think. They're influential people.
These are not knuckle draggers over here.
Yeah, they're men and women of wealth and finance.
You'd be surprised how many professionals are among the ranks of the stick
carrier. I consider
carriers.
Myself a stick carrier.
You're not a professional.
So the stick carriers are men and women of means.
They cut across all genders and all persuasions and all economic strata.
I can say about 2.5 years ago, I bought my 2010 Ford at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa. They're not just about new Cadillacs. Fantastic pre-owned experience at Ed Morse. My daughter bought her, actually, I think it's an 07, what the hell they call that thing? I forgot. A Saturn. She bought a Saturn
Gremlin.
Hasn't had a problem. Hasn't had an inch of a problem since buying that Saturn at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa as well. So, fantastic stuff.
Steve, not only is this reporting day, but I believe we're about a week away, from Stick Carrier Day. Lee?
We are 9 days.
Don't you have a little special announcement about transportation?
I don't know about how special, Ira. And you know what? We're recording this a little bit in advance. Tickets may be gone, but anybody can go to trainingcampexpress.com, trainingcampexpress.com, or they can see it at joebucksfan.com. Training Camp Takeover Day, a.k.a. Stick Carrier Day.
August 5th.
August 5th, 9 days from the start of this podcast, second Saturday of training camp. The Stick Carriers, the hardest of the hardcore fans from Bucks Uncensored, Justin's podcast. Dirk Cutter endorses the Stick Carriers, and that practice day is going to take your regular training camp day into a playoff-like atmosphere with constant cheering, constant chanting, constant energy to let the team know finally that you know what? Buccaneers fans can be like Browns fans.
Steelers fans.
Seattle's 12th man and Steelers fans. No more. We're not taking this bad reputation anymore. It's changing, and it's already happened.
Drinking on the bus allowed, Stephen? Encouraged,
well,
perhaps?
The bus is the Training Camp Express. Leaves from Abe's Place, 8 a.m., departs to One Buck Palace, Saturday, August 5th. And then, about 15 minutes after camp ends, after you get an autograph, Everybody heads back to Abe's on the luxury bus from Pure Limousines. And it's $5 round trip, Ira, but you also get a $5 coupon or gift certificate, whatever you want to call it, to get $5 of free food or drink at Abe's. So it really costs you nothing.
Any chance of a second bus if the first one sells out?
Well, we may already be on the second bus right now. I don't know. Like I said, we're recording a little bit in advance, but this will sell out. That's really the only thing to know. This will sell out. We sold it out twice last year. It's not a new thing. It's very smooth, a lot of fun. If you live in Pinellas County, this is where you want to go. What an easy trip. And yes, you can drink alcohol on the Pure Limousine luxury bus.
And you're going down there with all your cohorts. So, you know,
it's great, great, great fun. And you'll love this, Ira, because I know you don't understand the passion of fans. Lee and I have been like fans. You know, we understand fans because we've been fans. You're so
I'm in the antiseptic press box.
You're 57 years removed from being a fan. You've been in the business so long. Last year for the Training Camp Express, literally, there was a guy who drove with his family from one from Land O'Lakes to Clearwater. To get on the bus.
That's going the wrong way, isn't it?
To go to Tampa.
Oh, there's a better one.
For practice, and then come back and eat at Abe's. Because he just wanted to be part of the fan experience. Just wanted to live it up. And there was another guy from Brandon. So he drove directly past training camp.
All the way west.
All the way west to Abe's, which is about, 35 minutes from the stadium on a weekend. You know, no traffic on Saturday
about
morning.
About 15 minutes from the beach.
Yeah, exactly. Near Clearwater Beach on Missouri Avenue there.
But he had a short commute from Brandon.
So he drove from Brandon.
Well, shorter.
I mean, to Tampa. He could have.
Yeah, but he drove to Clearwater to ride the bus back to One Buck to be with Bucks
fans.
That's
respect, Steve.
It's big-time respect. And
be part of the movement.
Yeah, I just wanted to have some fun. And it's a definitely fun crowd. I mean, you can imagine who's on that bus. These are the jersey-wearing, stick-carrier-type fans.
Well, now you might have a guy from Panama City over there, Lee. He's going to put Brandon in his rearview mirror, going from Panama City and flying in, and I don't mean Panama City panhandle up there, by Destin. I'm talking about Panama City.
What about the OKC boys?
I know Javier was planning to fly in from Panama for training camp takeover day. Just a couple hours on the plane, so no big deal. But no, it's pretty darn cool. All right. Look, the fans know listening to this podcast, they know that Dirt Cutter Part 7 is on this podcast. For anybody, like I said before, a lot of fans, training camps here, they're coming back to getting into the spirit of being fans. Not everybody's a year-round, 12-month-a-year crazy fan. And so we know we might have, 400-500-600 people who've never listened to the podcast before or haven't listened since the Bucks flushed away their playoff chances or the draft or something like that.
Lee, Isbitz has cut up Cutter into 7 bites. I don't think Spielberg can do a better editing job over here. I thought it was going to be, one podcast with Dirk Cutter. This man's made it last about a month. Extraordinary.
That's what we do.
So, Ira, today we saved us some real good juice. We asked Dirk Cutter about, does a good season bleed into the next? Bucks just finished 9-7. And of course, we asked Dirk about Jameis Winston, the franchise.
In your experience, and you got a lot of it, does one season bleed into another in terms of, if you finish good in 2016, it's going to give the team confidence, or do you start fresh, totally start fresh?
That's a great question, and I don't know that I know the exact answer. I think if you did well the season before, or if you had momentum, you're going to play on it. And if you did poorly the season before, you're going to say, we're starting over. I know on this team, our players, I can just tell by being around them, they're excited, they're eager to get back to work, and they're more confident. Now, does that mean jack squat
when you go to Miami?
No, because Miami doesn't care what our guys think, right? They're worrying about themselves. And then the other thing is you're going to turn over at least a third of your team. There's going to be different guys, different makeup. Okay, how does DeSean Jackson and Chris Baker, those type of guys, J.J. Wilcox, coming into our locker room, how does that change it? Leadership-wise, we have a relatively young team. So what goes on within the walls of the locker room, that's always, that's kind of being molded, and then winning and losing has something to do with that too.
Last one for me, Coach. Jameis, we didn't really talk about Jameis. For the typical fan who just loves Jameis, sees the growth, but sees that, hey, maybe he's still even toward the bottom of the NFC South quarterbacks. It's so competitive. What's his next step this year? What really is the next level for Jameis? You see him every day.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to look at it, is everyone, including me and including him, I mean, Jameis, he wants to be great. He wants to be the best. But there's 32 teams. Just think about the quarterbacks in our division. The last two MVPs, plus Drew Brees, who's won a Super Bowl, and Jameis, he's got his hands full just being the best quarterback in our division. You know what's really great about Jameis is, even though he has his personal goals that he's working towards, Jameis is unique in that, whether it's his dad, how he was raised, his folks, his family, or through Jimbo of Florida State, Jameis is very genuine in wanting to win. He puts winning above all else, no matter how it looks. He puts winning first, and I appreciate that about him. So I think the next step, if you really ask Jameis, I mean, sure, he'd like to be higher on the NFL top 100. I'm sure he'd love to be the MVP someday, but Jameis wants to get us in the playoffs and win a Super Bowl first and foremost. So, you know, that's what our team, that makes it easier for me, because I know he's motivated by that. If we wanted to go out and throw for 5,000 yards, I'm confident we could throw for 5,000 yards, but I can't guarantee you we'd win any more games.
Sure. We appreciate it. Did Arthur Blank call you Dirk, or did he call you Doug, or did he know your name?
I'm going to tell you guys a good Arthur Blank story after we get off the air.
All right. All right, thanks, sir.
I like Cutter's answer, Lee, because, again, it cuts right to the heart of things, and his honesty shines through. He wants to say, as a guy coming off a 9-7 season, first winning season since 2010 for this franchise, part of Dirk Cutter wants to say, of course a season bleeds into another, because it's positive. Even though they finished 2-2 in December, it was still a successful season for 98% of Buck fans out there, but, you know, Buck universe. They were in the playoff hunt. Mm-hmm. They didn't get there, but they were in it. Meaningful games in December. That's one way of analyzing what a good season is for the Buck. And let's face it, the bar is pretty low in Buckland. We know that, Lee. So a big part of Cutter wants to say, of course, one season has a big impact on another. But what does he say? I'm not sure. He says if you don't have a good season, you don't want to think that way. If you have a good season, you want to think that way. But then he makes the point, the bottom of the roster's churned. So you got 12 guys who weren't there in 2016. They don't know what all the hubbub's about. They weren't here. Then you've got new players. You know, you've got the DeSean Jacksons. You got Baker. You got the rookie class.
Sure.
You know, no question about that. So what other coaches say, which is really true, Lee, is every year stands by itself. It's a distinctive year. And when the season ends, they say, you know, this team's never going to be together intact like it was. And that's true. Buck fans hope 2016 bleeds into 2017 to a certain degree. We'll see. But again, Cutter can't help it. The guy speaks with candor, and we like that.
Yeah, I mean, emotionally he wants to say it's going to, but logically he caught himself and like, well, I don't know. And see if you remember this, Ira. I remember Greg Schiano talking about this. And I know a lot of fans, you mentioned Greg Schiano, and they freak out. I thought Schiano was overly criticized. I got along with Greg. I thought Greg was okay. I thought the image of Greg Schiano being, you know, Mr. Drill Sergeant, I thought was a little overblown.
But we've heard from people inside the building.
Oh,
Lee.
People inside the building couldn't stand him. And I think that's what killed him. The Glazers knew that. You know, yeah, the people inside the building, they couldn't stand him. People that you never, ever, ever, ever hear them say a negative word about anybody just unloaded on Schiano.
Yes.
But at any rate, I don't know if you remember Schiano saying this or not. Someone asked him about the same subject. You know, how's your team when it practices during the week? Can you tell they're going to play okay? And Schiano said, you know, you really can't. And he quoted Bear Bryant. He goes, I remember Bear Bryant said he couldn't tell how a team, their demeanor during the week, if that transfers over to a game.
You're fooled a lot of times.
Yeah, So Schiano said, if Bear Bryant couldn't figure it out, I'm not going to be able to figure it out. So Cutter was right. And, you know, indirectly, that's what Bear Bryant was saying, the same thing. Basically, you can't tell. You know, emotionally, they might be great, but when it comes game time, like Cutter said, Miami doesn't give a hoot. They don't care.
But, Steve, the guys that have been here, the Lavonte Davids, the McCoys, the DeMar Dotsons, the guys that have been here have to draw, I believe, draw confidence from the 2016 season. I believe that's true.
Here's where they draw confidence from.
I think they feel this team is on the rise when they haven't always felt that way during their tenure with the Bucks.
Here's where they draw confidence from, and it was in that clip that we heard. Number three.
Yeah.
Number three. When you interviewed DeMar Dotson earlier this summer, That was really eye-opening for me. DeMar is one of the best guys you could ever deal with, but he's never really that open like he was with you, talking about Jameis, like, wow.
And he went right to number three.
Yeah, and I think that's the common denominator. If you go to other players, they'll, you know, Clinton McDonald, you talk to Clinton McDonald, he'll point right to Jameis. And how many years has Clinton McDonald been in the NFL? Has a ring.
Has a ring.
So, and he points right to Jameis. So I think that's the common denominator there, Jameis.
Yeah, the bleed over is always fascinating. Look, as an organization, the Buccaneers expect there will be a carryover. I mean, the Glazers expect that. Yeah, we just finished 9-7, arrow pointing up. Let's keep it going. I mean, that's the expectation of everybody listening to this podcast. But is it real? That's the question. Just Bear Bryant, you know, he's had his opinions, Shiano, whatever.
Well, Steve, the Glazers saw it happen. 96-97, that terrible start under Dungy. It was only losing season in 13 years as an NFL coach. But they finished strong. They finished strong in 96, and then along come the 49ers, game one, 97. That's the turnaround game.
Yes.
And the Niners had a heck of a team, and the Bucs beat them up, physically whipped them. Rice goes down. Young goes down. The fans are in a frenzy. And Bucks make the playoffs that year. So the Glazers have seen it happen.
And the flip side is true as well. Correct me if I'm wrong. 97, they make the playoffs. Lost to the Packers in the playoffs, right?
Yes.
And they won a game, beat Detroit at home, went to Green Bay. Next year, missed the playoffs.
Missed
am I correct?
Playoffs. Yes, missed the playoffs.
So both sides. The Glazers have seen both sides.
Yeah, and to take it a little further with the current team, Dirk Cutter is going into his second year as a head coach. He should take a stride, just like a player, a rookie should take a big stride in his second year. Cutter's got all those details out of the way. A lot of the learning curves.
To expect.
You know, I know you like to talk about all the pressure of people asking him when's the bus leaving and when's the food coming and all those details.
You know what? You laugh about that, but I think it's real. We don't have any idea about how many things come across his.
Sure. Bus. No matter. The point is that he's more set in his role. Should be able to be a better coach in his second year, no question. I mean, that would be a knock on him if he can't improve.
Time management.
From a tremendous learning experience, and I believe we saw that through the season, that he got better as a coach. The record showed it, certainly. And they also paid up for Mike Smith. They paid Mike Smith to make sure that last season carried over into this season. They paid for that. So whether it happens or not, I don't know, but
It really should.
I mean, let me just finish, Ira. It really should. If you're a good coach and your team's head is on straight, last season should carry over. When you finish the second half 6-2, I mean, that's gotta mean something the next year. Otherwise, you're not building a program.
Another point I think in favor of 2016 bleeding into 2017 to a certain extent is continuity in the coaching ranks. And Steve just touched on it. Cutter's back. He's in charge of the offense. Mike Smith's not going anywhere. Defense improved markedly after the bye week. And, guys, you look around the division, McDermott's gone from Carolina. That doesn't help. Shanahan is gone. That doesn't help. And the Saints are a long way away anyway.
Think so?
I think so. I don't think they've done much to upgrade that defense. I still think it's a substandard defense.
And they've taken some hits on defense. They had an injury. Fairly, his career may be over with his heart condition.
You know, Cameron Jordan is waiting for a little help up front. How long is this guy going to wait? Rankins isn't bad. He's not bad. He was a good draft pick. But they need a lot of help on – and Drew Brees is tired of trying to win shootouts every week. But continuity, Steve, they've kept it in the coaching staff by and large, and I think that's a significant step towards allowing one season to bleed into another.
Here we're talking about bleeding over and the ultimate non-bleed over you wrote about earlier in July. Do I dare bring up 2011?
No question about it. Now, well, they 2000, started 4-2.
That's the thing. It did bleed over. They were 4-2. They beat the Saints and the Falcons, and looking great, and then they fell off the map.
But Ira made a point. Head screwed on straight, I think, is what the phrase you used. Inaccurately. I can't think of the opposite of straight. Crooked. That would be Josh Freeman.
And when things went awry, Steve, in 2011, they didn't have any leadership. They had no leadership to step up and stop what was – I think the ugliest stretch in Buck history.
Now
those 10 games.
That brings us That brings us to Dirk Cutter, who just actually mentioned, we all just heard him say, young leadership, very young leadership on this team. Cutter may emphasize that, you know what, we don't have a lot of veteran leaders at the core, which I thought was interesting when you've got Gerald McCoy, who used to think he was the face of the franchise.
But again, the first guy he thinks of is number three.
I understand, but
where Steve's going from,
but
going.
Still, you've got McCoy,
29 years old, five-time Pro Bowler on defense. Lavonne David is was voted a captain by his team last year. This is his, what, his sixth year?
Brent Grimes.
Ayers.
Sweezy.
You know, we're talking, well, I'm just saying on defense.
Yeah.
You know, that's a lot of veteran leadership. Other side of the ball, look at that offensive line. There's some big guys on that O-line from a leadership perspective. But Cutter's focus was on the young guys, which, honestly, I think that's where it should be. Because you've talked about this, Ira. You've even suggested on podcast, and I've written it off your wisdom, your sage wisdom, that Gerald McCoy, you know, you put it on the table. You think he might not make the captain's vote this year, that there may be a changing of leadership. And this is Quan Alexander's team on defense. And obviously it's now Jameis's team on offense, and Mike Evans has lofted his status. He's still only 23 years old. So it's neat to see that Cutter sees the very young leadership. But he mentioned with that leadership, he doesn't know how that's going to mesh in the locker room with DeSean Jackson and Chris Iverson Baker, as you call him, and J.J. Wilcox as well.
Yes. Lee, let's be honest. The first two guys that Cutter thinks of, like most Buck fans, I think of in terms of this leadership, is number three and Quan Alexander. Those are the two guys. And, boy, they don't have a lot of NFL experience, but they are the faces on each side of the ball.
My tongue is firmly planted in my cheek when I say this, but there's a hint of realism I'm going to ask you here, Ira. Do you think Bucks fans consider Chris Conte a leader?
I don't think so, because I don't think his play gives him that status. You know, he's a leader in terms of being a veteran, but that's it. He doesn't fulfill the other check marks. Conte falls short.
And I'm going to ask Steve something here, and I'm being very serious when I ask this. You know, he's talking about, he being Cutter, young leadership. And Steve, you pulled off a radio interview with Lavonne David, if I recall correctly, shortly after that debacle in Arizona. And something about his head wasn't in the game or something along that nature. But you quoted Lavonne David, and to this day, I'm shaking my head. Like, he can't be a leader.
Yeah, that was startling, Steve.
I don't remember it specifically, but
I think it was Lavonne David.
There have been a few examples of Lavonne David showing or verbalizing that he's just mentally weak. And doesn't make him a bad football player, but he's just not that guy to be the soul and the pulse and the heart and the balls of your team.
And like a Derrick Brooks.
No, he's no Derrick Brooks. Yeah.
He's just not wired that way. And, you know, even, frankly.
And that's not saying anything bad about the guy. He's just not a leader.
No,
and McCoy may not be wired that way.
Well, I think it's very interesting. We already know that Jameis Winston already had Hard Knocks cameras trailing him this spring and summer. He embraced it. They've already been filming Jameis working out with Tim Grover and all that stuff. Jameis wants it. He wants to take that mantle. Lavonne David, when he was asked at the podium, I think we were all there that day, and in the spring they asked him about Hard Knocks. He said, "You won't see me on it. I'll be doing everything I can to not be seen on Hard Knocks." And not that Hard Knocks is some barometer of being a great football player, but it speaks to, you know, he doesn't want that role of coming out there and leading, and that's fine. But
that doesn't diminish Lavonne David as a football player.
No.
But we're talking about Dirk Cutter, who was talking about young leadership in the locker room, and it's true. There are new guys to integrate every year. You don't know if that's going to help the chemistry or hurt it. I think they'll be fine because I think we all agree guys like Ayers and Quan and Jameis have very big strongholds on this club.
You think Morpeth could be one of those guys, Lee, going forward?
I've heard that.
If he settles in at center?
I've heard that from people in the know. I've heard that Morpeth's starting to develop not just a little leadership. He's starting to develop like a nasty edge like Joe Hawley had.
A little swagger?
Yes. Yeah. So I have heard that, yes. And I got a question I'm going to pose to you, Ira. We just mentioned Jameis and how he embraced the Hard Knocks cameras at his private workouts. Is part of that Jameis trying to rehab his image? Now, what I mean by that is, obviously, Bucks fans, they know all about Jameis. The people that had any doubts about Jameis coming out of Florida State with all the nonsense that went on in Tallahassee, they've been won over. 98% of the Bucks fans have been won over. There's still an element there that doesn't like him. I get it. But do you think this is part of a way to rehab his image? So, you know what? This isn't the monster some people made him out to be.
I don't think Winston's too concerned with that 2%. That they're always going to be out there, Steve. And I think my feeling at least is you're never going to win those people over. They closed the book on Jameis Winston in 2015. Just like certain people towards politics, you're never going to move them off their spot. No, Is it a message maybe to his teammates? This is how we're going to have to get it done. Yes, but as far as to the fan base and to the skeptics, I don't think Winston thinks about that anymore. I think he feels everything's in the rearview mirror.
I 110% disagree with you, Ira. 110%.
What about 130? Why do you got to stop at 110?
110%. You know, Jameis knows that stuff's not in the rearview mirror out in the real world. And Lee's right. You know, sure, those who locally here, sure, we've seen Jameis. We get it. We've seen his prowess in the community and his consistency.
Who's talking about it on a national basis, Mr. Hizbit?
It's not about who's talking about it. It's how it's affecting Jameis from the scope of endorsements.
Yeah, financially.
To he's looking big picture for himself, as he should be. And I think it's very much all about that. Hard Knocks is a real chance for Jameis to change the view on him that he can control at least a chunk of it. Because it's a reality show. It's not like Hard Knocks is going to have some sort of narrator commenting on what they're seeing. You're just going to see Jameis and, you know, make your own decisions, which is what Jameis really has been yearning for.
Are you guys saying Winston hasn't done any national interviews? I mean, the guy's not living in a cocoon.
It's national interviews, but remember, Hard Knocks is on HBO. It's not NFL Network, although it will be in a year. They always rebroadcast a year later. So this is going to a more broad audience, not the narrow footballholics. I remember, and you went on Chris Russo's show, which you always do during the football season, every week on SiriusXM Radio. You were on with Chris Russo, the Mad Dog, and you had your suspicions about Jameis. Obviously, he won you over. And you were being just the objective journalist. Like, well, I don't know about, you know, this guy's attitude. You know, he's
could
a little
be
over
a
the
fake.
Top.
Yep.
And you, all everything you were concerned about has been dispelled.
Now are you two gentlemen?
You use that term loosely.
The first time I've used that on a podcast referring to you two. Are you suggesting that Hard Knocks will delve into Winston's off-field issues of the past?
I don't think so.
And it will be screened? Are you suggesting that we will see that? Because as far as I know, Jameis Winston's never addressed those points.
They might mention it.
On air since he became a Buck.
I don't see how they're going to do that. Jameis reached a settlement, legal settlement. He can't comment on that stuff. It's not worth the risk for him to do that. No, I don't think so. I think he's just going to put out an image of himself.
His work ethic.
Yeah, all that stuff. All that stuff. Yeah. And not that he's got some sort of huge issue out there right now, but big picture, it matters. And you know what? That stuff doesn't always linger, Ira. Look at Ben Roethlisberger. Very few people think about his past at this point.
Well, I got a better one than Roethlisberger.
And there's plenty of others.
Ray Lewis.
It's not going to affect Ray Lewis in that Hall of Fame room. I can tell you that.
The thing about Hard Knocks and Jameis and his image, I wouldn't be shocked if Hard Knocks, in a passing reference, mentioned it. Just in a passing reference. But NFL Films is not going to put it unless something happens. You know, for example, the Chad Johnson incident a couple years ago when they were doing the Dolphins Hard Knocks. And Chad Johnson was a domestic issue, and he got cut because of that. NFL Films is not going to put anybody in a bad light in Hard Knocks unless something actually pops up that's significant. So this is the perfect way for Jameis to help portray or push that image. I don't know if push is the right word, but show the image that, you know, I'm not this monster that people made me out to be at Tallahassee. NFL Films, i.e. Hard Knocks, is the perfect vehicle.
Here's the thing, Ira. And we'll close the door on the Hard Knocks. Hard Knocks doesn't get very good ratings. We've talked about this a long time ago. Doesn't get very good ratings at all. Television ratings, not at all. However, the cuts, the gifs, the things that are going to go on social media about Jameis, that's the stuff that'll go viral, that'll be seen all over the place by really the core football audience, as well as the main
YouTube, Facebook,
yeah,
Twitter,
all over the place. And those cuts that are all Jameis either working out or is screaming or a speech or this or that, the stuff that shows his, you know, intensity and his football character and all that. I think he's counting on that, and he's obviously trying to get as much shot of good stuff out there as he can.
So you're saying that he's still a relative mystery out there beyond the Tampa Bay area, beyond
Florida. Oh, I think so. Sure.
And this is going to sharpen his image.
Well, I can only speak for myself, and this is obviously, as the baseball stat geeks love to use the term, small sample size. But going on the road with the Bucks, just to see how people react to Jameis in sports bars, It's just unbelievable. And I'm talking negative. I mean, visceral spittle, Bill Cowher spittle, hatred of the guy. And I'm not exaggerating. I went to a Jerome Bettis' bar in Pittsburgh when the Bucks were playing up there And obviously Jameis wasn't on the team then. He was at Florida State, and they had a Florida State game on TV. Guys that were 60 years old, they saw Jameis on the big screen. It's like someone shot him with a cattle prod, just screaming at the TV, veins bulging out of their neck, spittle. I'm not making this up, Ira. And there's a friend of mine back home, very, very, you know, good citizen. He's a good friend of mine. Sends his daughters go to college. I mean, just a model citizen, you know. I mentioned Jameis Winston's name to the guy, and he just started dropping that no good mother, blah, blah, blah. So outside the Tampa Bay area, Jameis's image is not exactly pleasant to a lot of people.
Well, now it's 2 years later, Steve, and he basically has not committed a misstep as a Buccaneer.
First of all, not according to Tom Jones, not according to the biggest newspaper in town.
One columnist.
Ira, not 5 months ago, Jameis was clobbered, crucified on national television for 3 days in a row because there was really nothing
for
going on
sentences.
At that time. Because of one sentence.
And there were other powerful voices saying much ado about nothing at the same time.
Not even close to the amount. We're talking killed from CNN to ESPN for days. He hasn't recovered from that nationally.
The people who've dealt with Jameis nationally, you know, there's not a whole lot of people. Peter King, Brett McHenry went to Jameis' defense because they know Jameis. They've dealt with Jameis. Like, you know, but the people, Molly Quarum, perfect example. You know, Jameis had that apology, and Molly Quarum, well, that's not good enough for me. Well, Molly, that says more about you than it does Jameis. I'm sorry. And so the people that have dealt with Jameis that sort of know him, they got no problem with him. But the people that have never dealt with him, never knew him, they have that image of him at Florida State being borderline out of control.
And, of course, it always helps when you're in the playoffs, guys. So on the field, he's got work to do.
He's got to do better. He's got to do better. All right, a few questions for you, Ira, but first, two things. One, I have to visit
Whatever you say, I disagree with you 110%.
Why not 130?
There's a preemptive strike. 100. Oh, yeah, 115%. I got to top you.
One, I have to visit Ed Moore's Cadillac Tampa and Ed Moore's Cadillac Brandon. Their websites as well, edmoorescadillactampa.com, edmoorescadillacbrandon.com. Number two, we've got a little bit more Dirk Cutter coming up in about 5 minutes here. So you're going to like that. It's actually some really cool stuff. We're going to be able to rehash the entire cut of Dirk Cutter, our 20-plus minutes sit down with him, and everybody could just enjoy it start to finish.
Rather exclusive, wouldn't you say, Stephen?
It was completely exclusive. But also in there, Ira, is the one nugget that we did not reveal as part of the podcast. So there is something new in there. And that was Cutter talking about the division, about Matt Ryan and the changes in offensive coordinator there. And, you know, Cutter basically said that, no, this isn't going to slow the Saints down, slow the Falcons down, because they're just too good, too much talent. Matt Ryan won't get flustered. But the interesting thing, Ira, that I want you to comment on is Cutter mentioned that, you know what, we don't play a division foe till week 8. Who knows what the hell's going to go on? I can't care about the division, really. How unique do you feel entering this season? How unique a situation is this, and how does it change the game a little bit that you don't have a division foe until halfway through?
I thought that was an interesting part of Cutter's answer when I asked him directly about Kyle Shanahan's departure from the Falcons. Look, they had an incredible offense last year and a decent defense. They scored a ton of points, even in the Super Bowl. They're up 28-3. You score 28 points, you should win that football game if you're good enough to, you know, win the NFC Championship. That means you got a pretty good defense. The fact that for the first half of the season, they don't play a division foe in terms of the Falcons-Buck rivalry, Steve, I think what Cutter was saying is they have a new guy, Steve Sarkisian. Steve, he's never been an offensive coordinator on the NFL level. He's never done it, just like Ali Marpet has never done it at center. So it's a leap of faith a bit. Sarkisian has coaching experience, but not at that position. So first thing I think Cutter – first two things about Cutter. One, and he's already proven this, Stephen, much to our chagrin, in no way does he ever want to be perceived as taking a shot at a division rival, especially the Falcons, a team that he worked for and kind of built his reputation. We saw it with the 28-3 visual when nobody was asking him about it.
On Twitter.
And he's not going to take a shot at Sarkisian. He's not going to suggest that Matt Ryan's going to take a step back. He's not going to do that. So he's very careful about that, about being diplomatic. But to go to your point directly about not playing a division rival till the second half, which is very unusual,
yeah,
Lee, that does give Sarkisian a chance to grow into the job and develop that relationship with Ryan. And do they have a lot of talent on offense? Yeah, they got a lot of talent on offense. I still think the offensive line played over their heads last year. And
really,
Mr. DeKemper, may I add, and Cutter pointed this out, they're the only offensive line in football that didn't suffer an injury up front. That's very rare, all five guys. Can they bank on that again? Probably not. But when you got Ryan, when you got Julio Jones, you got a couple of good backs, you got some good depth at receiver beyond Jones, that's a tough team to deal with. They spread you out. They chop you to ribbons. But I think, in my opinion, I think Shanahan was a big part of it. I think the guy is tremendous at what he does, and we'll see how he does in San Francisco. But he did one hell of a job as Atlanta's offensive coordinator.
I don't know how you could say he wasn't a factor. I mean, my gosh, he was key cog, obviously. It'll be interesting. Well, you know what? You know who else harps like Cutter does? Who harps on the offensive line being injury-free and the reason why they were winning? Pat Kerwin. He just said a common denominator. Why were they winning? Why was the offense humming? Health up front. And Kerwin is a huge believer in that. He said that's no coincidence. So, like you said, can Atlanta bank on being injury-free up front for the whole season? That's a gamble. I don't think so.
And we
either.
Don't know what kind of depth they have.
That's don't right. know what kind of depth they have. But when you said they played over their heads, I don't know if I go there because they had some talent. Alex Mack, Matthews, who I think is underrated.
Mack's coming off an injury, Steve, I believe.
He was injured in the Super Bowl, wasn't he?
Yeah, a little bit of an injury.
So I won't go as far as to say they played over their head, but to believe that they're going to be injury free a second season, that's a bit much.
Cutter was not about to say that the Falcons are going to take a step back because of Shanahan's.
No, he doesn't want to give them ammunition.
I think what you said was very profound, Ira.
Wait a minute, I thought you disagreed with me 110%.
No, that was just one little item, Ira. One thing you said was that he doesn't want to be perceived to be taking a shot at the Falcons, and. You know, if he said anything related to, well, you know, it's tough with a new offensive coordinator. It takes time no matter who
you
are.
We don't know.
You know, I remember when I first took over with Matt and we blah, 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 blah. But he didn't go there at all, not even a shred. And he doesn't want that perception out there at all, which is just fine. All right, folks, a couple things. Remember, at the end of this podcast, just coming right up, you've got the full interview, Ira, Lee DeKemper, and myself with Dirk Cutter. Can enjoy it all the way through, get a little bit different feel. Versus the getting it chopped up. I hope you enjoyed our exclusive sit down with him. If you haven't listened to Tuesday's podcast from 2 days ago, Ira talks about what he's looking for in training camp. You know, a lot of you listening are going out to practice in a few days, tomorrow actually, or this weekend.
The focal points, obviously.
Ira broke down, looked at what he's looking for in these early practices and some other cool stuff, so that's always fun. Football is here, and Ira... I'm going to tell you this. I don't want to scare you, okay? Because I know you're a very competitive guy. But Monday debuts my own podcast on JoeBucksFan.com.
You breaking news on my podcast? You breaking news?
It's not really news, Ira. You know, found a great sponsor, new sponsor. But people have already seen them on the website this month. Discount Garage Doors, dgdoors.com.
What day of the week is this podcast?
It's just going to be a Monday only thing. A little bit different twist, sort of a chance to go in some very, very different directions. Not too long.
Does that mean you're departing my podcast, Mr. Isbell?
Oh, no. I know where my star is made.
Where your matzah is buttered over. Lee, are you listening to this? He's breaking away. It's like Gypsy Rose Lee over here. Starting her own strip show.
We're going to be going deep, not long, but deep. You know, maybe one or two things that try to keep a little interesting. Also gives me an extra chance to promote some of the great things that we're doing.
It's going to be year-round, Stephen? We'll see.
Well, sponsor talks, and we expect to deliver for Discount Garage Doors, a great local company, actually from Lee's neck of the woods, Spring Hill, but they cover the whole Tampa Bay area.
Now the Kemper wants his own podcast over there, Steve.
Well, there may be an announcement very, very shortly on that as well.
And I may have to use Mr. Garage Door. although my garage door is okay, I need a new garage door opener. I could use a new screen. So I might have to take advantage of this.
DGDoors.com, and very excited for them. Good people. We always love good people.
Who's next for a podcast? George Warhop? What do you got coming down the pike over here? Yeah. I wish you a lot of luck with this endeavor.
No, you don't, Ira. Come on.
As long as you don't compete against my podcast over there, Steve.
No competition, Ira. You are the sage of Tampa Bay sports, the custodian of Canton himself. And I'm going to send you out of here, Ira. We're going to send everybody over to Dirk Cutter joining us back in June. Enjoy the interview. We'll see you at practice. And Tuesday is our next podcast.
You got to keep it fresh. All right, so the season gets long, and it gets redundant. These are young guys that we're working with, and you don't have a team of 30-year-olds. You might have a few. Most of these guys are really young guys, so we're just looking for ways to keep it fresh. Even though the information is somewhat similar from week to week, we're just trying to find ways that make sense to them. I mean, these guys don't look at everything the way old men like you three guys look at. They look at things differently. So trust me, on all the stuff, all the subliminal stuff or motivational stuff, I've failed many times. Like some of that stuff goes over like a rock. Some of it goes over big. And you're never going to hit, right now we got 90 guys on the team. Eventually we'll have 53. You're never going to hit it a perfect home run every time. But at the same time, I think it's my job to take risks at trying to show these guys different ways of looking at it to get our point across.
Dirk, we've talked a lot about weapons. It's been a heck of an off season for you and Jason. But Dirk, is there a real concern, or am I overstating it, that you got a lot of talent that targets for Jameis, and you got to keep everybody happy, or in the end you're going to say everybody's going to get their touches? Is that a concern?
Yeah, I've just found over the years that if you're winning, everything takes care of itself. All right. The only time touches and targets become an issue is when your team's struggling. Then it becomes an issue. Everyone's gonna play along fine when you're winning, and we plan on winning. So as a coach, I don't think you can worry about that. You can't. What coach would get up there and say we have too many good players? I mean, that's the plan. Get more good players. Now, how do you keep them all happy? Well, put together a team and a system that has a chance to win every week. If you don't win, I'm not going to be happy. They're not going to be happy. You guys aren't going to be happy.
Dirk, Kyle Shanahan is gone from Atlanta. You know him. You respect him. I think you think he's one of the more talented and creative guys out there. Dirk, will his departure in your mind have any dramatic effect on Matt Ryan and the Falcons, the league's leading scoring offense?
You're catching me off guard on that, because just the way it works out this year, we don't even play any division games till after week 8. So, you do look at what your division added and subtracted, and obviously Atlanta lost Kyle Shanahan. I think Matt Ryan's a pro's pro, so I don't think anything's going to rattle him too much. And even though I think Kyle Shanahan did a tremendous job with their offense last year, I think Steve Sarkisian's a pretty good coach too. But I don't think anything's going to rile up Matt Ryan too much.
He's still going to have a terrific season.
Look at the guys. I mean, he's got Julio Jones and Devontae Freeman playing with him. I mean, they still got a good football team.
Doug Martin, I know this is a kind of really fluid hypothetical question here, but everybody wants to do best for Doug. There's no question about that. He's going through, as you stated before, it's bigger than football. Let's say everything works out great. He has, everything's good on a health standpoint. He's great training camp. Runs really well in the preseason. Well, then he hits the 3-game suspension. Whoever you choose to carry the rock during those 3 games, let's say they're fantastic, 4 and 5 yards a clip. When Doug becomes available, is he automatically slotted back in the starting spot, or are you the type of guy you go with the hot hand, or how would you determine what happens at that point?
Well, you answered your own question. That's all hypothetical. All right. Everything. How do I know if everything's going to go that way? I mean, by the time, hopefully at the end of the 3 games, Doug is still in good health, but we have no idea what's going to happen to our other tailbacks by then. So it really, I don't spend too much time worrying about that kind of stuff. Again, I go back to what we just said. How can you have too many good players? And I sort of look at it as we'll cross that bridge when we get to it, because why worry about it until you have to? Because we got a lot of other stuff that we need to be concerned with. And you know, if everything was 100% perfect, I don't have experience with a guy taking 3 weeks off and then coming back. So, you know, you'd have a practices in there, and we'd have to kind of see it. It'd depend on how we were doing as an offense, how we're doing with our running game. We'll just have to see.
Dirk, it's my job to make you smile. So
that won't be now, hard today.
Dirk, Izbitz has been talking about this for a month. The stick carriers are going to come out in force at one day, particular day in training camp. Dirk, we don't have the date yet. You are going to notice them, and so are the players, Dirk. They're going to be loud. Izbitz is going to whip them into a frenzy. What is your message, Dirk, your basic message to these diehard Buck fans? These are the diehards.
Okay, well, first off, I am extremely fired up about the stick carriers, okay? And not because of the name. That is a cool name. I'm going to give you guys, that is a cool name. It's weird how it came about. That wasn't the plan.
Dirk, there's T-shirts. Okay, yeah.
But here's what I like about it. When I hear you guys and I hear the commish and the people that call in talking about the stick carriers, really what the stick carriers are, and you guys have been here a long time, it's the Seattle game. Right, it's the Seattle game. It's bringing that crowd at Ray J. The stick carriers are just the ones out front of the charge. But I know what it's like to play in stadiums when you're playing against the home crowd and the other team. And if we get that home crowd like it was in that Seattle game for 8 home games, we're going to be tough to beat.
Yeah, on that front, Dirk, the fan energy. I know you said you didn't intend for that to happen the way it played out, but a lot of times you speak to the fans. You know, you say, hey, no jerseys in the lower bowls, and people eat that.
I was serious about that. Yeah. I was very serious about that, and I like that a lot.
And people eat that up, and they hear your messages, and do you feel like you're connecting with the fans, or you can't think of it that deep? You're trying to mostly motivate your team? Because I don't know if you realize, if you get it out in public, you're really like a folk hero around town in such a huge way right now.
Well, you know, the jersey thing I was dead serious about. The first year I was here, and we played a couple of those teams from the Northeast. And
the
there
traditional
was,
teams.
The traditional teams that travel well. I mean, we had to go to silent count in our own home stadium, and that's just not right. And the organization, the fans, and the team has to play better, okay? Anytime I start talking too much about my role with the fans, they're going to slap me right back to earth, and there's always going to be a bunch of people on Joe Buck's fans telling, hey, Dirk, worry about coaching the team. And I get that. That's my ultimate job. But I'm always looking to give us every advantage we can get to try to win, because it's all about winning. And to answer your question directly, I'm worried about motivating my team, but I want the fans' help, because we need the home field advantage.
At what point, Dirk, I know in February when I spoke with you at the Combine, you had mentioned at that point Allie was going to move to center and J.R. Sweezy was going to be right guard. And apparently we know someone that scoped out Jameis and Allie a week or two before at one of these community football fields taking snaps with each other. At one point did you get comfortable enough with your information about Sweezy and his recovery that you like, hey, you know, we can bank on him being a starting right guard and we can move Allie to center?
I'm not sure exactly at what point that happened, but from the time Jason first brought Allie to us coming out of college and said, hey, let's start looking at this guy. I mean, all along, Jason, George Warhop, our old line coach, he was always projected as a guard center combo. When Allie first came his rookie year, we had 2 experienced centers, and we still have those guys right now. And then, obviously, last year, one of our big free agent signings with J.R. Sweezy. Unfortunate situation, he couldn't play. And because J.R. couldn't play, Kevin Pamphile went from being a swing lineman to a full-time starter. Did pretty well. He did pretty well last year. So all of a sudden, when it looked like J.R. was going to be back to full health, and he still hasn't practiced in pads, I know that, but looks like he's going to be fine. Well, you got 2 big physical guys in Kevin Pamphile and JR. We said, well, how are we going to get our best 5? And, you know, we love the way Joe Hawley plays the game. I loved him playing in Atlanta. I loved him playing here. But Joe played last year most games below 280 pounds. And Joe's game is getting out in space and running, but we got overpowered a little bit in the middle of our line at 280, and we wanted to get bigger, and we want to get our best five out there. Now, one team in the whole league last year had the same starting five the whole year with their
O-line.
It was the Atlanta Falcons. So you have to have depth on top of that. So you, right now we're talking about getting our best five, but that's still always fluid. If something happens somewhere, we're going to have to juggle it.
Dirk, you making any progress, or do you care about streamlining some of your administrative duties in year two, so you can do a little more hands-on coaching? I know that's something you want to do.
Yeah, everybody's been great about that, and we're on the right track as far as the organization has allowed me to bring a couple extra guys in more of a quality control mode. We've worked very well together to make this thing fit. Everyone wants the same thing in our organization. Everybody's working towards the same goal, and I'm confident that we're on the right track. We got to do it. We got to back it up.
You miss a little of the hands-on last year, a little bit?
No, not. I didn't miss any coaching. I didn't miss any coaching. Really, the only thing I miss is some of the meeting time. I like to be in that quarterback room when they're watching tape together. I like being in there, and I just have some other stuff that I couldn't be in there as much as I want. And it's ironic that you asked me that today, because in my journal this morning, sitting on my desk, I wrote down a note to myself: change this and change this, so I can be at the quarterback film meeting every day in training camp. And it's just I gotta make it work.
Somebody leaked your journal to me. That's why.
Yeah, Coach. What would you charge to read the journal per minute? There? That would be fun. I'm still devastated that you referred to me as an old guy with these guys. I just ruined my whole summer. I gotta hit the gym. Hey, that's not that fun. Coach, last summer you were in Idaho. It's a funny story. I actually paid a guy to go to the event you were at with Marvin Lewis to, try to get in some questions. That's what
the
we
man
do.
The man will go to any end, Dirk.
I looked into flying to Idaho, but it was like three connecting flights and like 2 days to get there. It was terrible. Anyway, the guy kind of chickened out. It was a local college guy there. But one of the things you did say to the reporter who you talked to a little bit was that Marvin Lewis told you to throw deep. That's how to win in the NFL. Throw deep. Defensive coordinators hate that. What kind of truth is in there? And now look at your roster this year. How does that maybe change what you do?
Well, the fact that we were way down on our explosive plays and we were the only team in the league that didn't have a pass over 50 yards last year, I think, that tells you one thing. The fact that Jason went out and got DeSean Jackson, explosive plays next to turnovers is the number one factor in winning football games in the NFL. We were just way down last year. Part of that was injuries, but we need to get better throwing the ball over the top, and we're working on it.
So you kept Dirk. You keep trying to grind out 12 play 80 yard drives. It's very difficult.
It's low percentage. Just low percentage. I mean, you can do it, but chances are you're going to get a hold in there. You're going to get a drop pass. You're going to get a penalty or something that's going to knock you back. So 80 yards at 4 yards a clip is tough duty.
Dirk, in your 2 years here, only one as a head coach, I understand, but the team didn't start well, Dirk, both years, 1-3, 1-3. What can you do to avoid to get off to a better getaway?
Well, we got off to a great getaway last year. If you call 1-0 winning in Atlanta good.
Perfect.
But then we went and got our butts kicked at Arizona the next week. And I just talked to the guys. Today was our last team meeting before the break. I actually talked to our guys about that this morning. And everything has to be focused right now towards September 10th at Miami. That's the most important game on our schedule right now. After that's over, we'll start worrying about the home opener against the Bears. And
but as a general theory about getting off to a good start.
Well, I think you want to do that in every game, and I think especially if you look at Jameis's career, when Jameis gets off to a fast start, we usually play pretty well. When he gets off to a slower start, not as well. So that's one of the things that I think falls a lot on the offensive coaching staff to have the right game plan early in games that we don't have to tinker around to find it, that we know what we want to do. That's usually a little bit easier later in the season when you've seen teams. Those early games when you don't, nobody does in the preseason exactly what they're going to do in the season.
You don't have tendencies.
You don't have tendencies. You don't They might not even be showing what they're really going to do, what their real strength is. So there's a lot of reasons behind that, but the fundamentals of how you win and lose, the turnovers, the explosive plays, third down conversions, sacks, scoring touchdowns in the red zone, those things never change.
Lee, do you have a last question?
Yeah, I've got one here. Defensive back depth. I understand it's shorts and shirts, and you can only take so much from it. Seems like rarely a practice goes by that we've seen that's been open. Javon Elliott hasn't made a play. And I'm hearing good things about Ryan Smith. Could it be that maybe your depth at cornerback may be better than what some people are anticipating or expecting?
Yeah, I think what happens is, teams in the NFL, you can only have so many name players that everybody knows their name. And sometimes if the fans haven't heard a name before, or even if the media hasn't heard a name before, they just assume the guy's no good. Okay, if a guy's out there on a 90-man roster in the NFL, he's pretty good. All right, he's there's a lot of guys that aren't, and it's going to get cut down even more. But what I would just say, because I read you guys' website, and if a corner's getting torched, then he gets torched on your website too. So now you're talking about guys you just don't know their name. Well, what about the guys that you want us to bring back, the guys that you were already mad at? I always laugh about that, because your depth is your depth. Okay, it's not like you can't just trade these guys out all day, because it's not like there's 200 great players sitting out there on the street. Someone would sign them, and so we believe in, obviously there's salary cap and there's draft and all that stuff. There's free agency, but you got to develop your players. Mm-hmm. And you look at, we mentioned Javion Elliott. Okay, so Javion Elliott was a tryout player last year, right? Like he was like how Adam Humphries was. And he improved every week. He ended up starting a couple games for us. Did fine. And he's continuing to get better out there. Ryan Smith, guy that played a couple different positions. We wanted to try him at safety. It didn't work out too well. We're putting him back at corner. He's doing better. A lot of times you don't really know how your depth is going to work out until they get in the fire and have to do it. Peyton Barber's another one. He came out of nowhere, as slowly but surely. When we needed him, he did okay. But you're never gonna have 53 known quantities that you're just gonna say, okay, number 46 on your roster goes out there, I know exactly what he's gonna do. That's never gonna happen.
You know, two points real quick. What you said to reinforce your point. You all see our Twitter feed when a player that's a recognized name gets cut or released for whatever reason. Immediately, Bucks interested in him. But in the immortal words of Jimbo Fish, is one of the greatest lines I ever heard. Some guy, one of us ink-stained or formerly ink-stained wretches, trying to play X's and O's with Jimbo Fisher, and kept pestering him and pestering him. And finally, Jimbo Fisher said, "This ain't PlayStation."
Last one for me, Dirk. In your experience, and you got a lot of it, does one season bleed into another in terms of, if you finish good in 2016, it's going to give the team confidence, or do you start fresh, totally start fresh?
Well, that's a great question. That's a great question, and I don't know that I know the exact answer. I think if you did well the season before, or if you had momentum, you're going to play on it, and if you did poorly the season before, you're going to say, we're starting over. I know on this team, our players, I can just tell by being around them, they're excited, they're eager to get back to work, and they're more confident. Now, does that mean jack squat
when you go to Miami?
No, because Miami doesn't care what our guys think, right? They're worrying about themselves. But and then the other thing is, you're going to turn over at least a third of your team. There's going to be different guys, different makeup, okay? How does DeSean Jackson and Chris Baker, those type of guys, J.J. Wilcox, coming into our locker room, how does that change it? Leadership-wise, we have a relatively young team. That what goes on within the walls of the locker room, that's always, that's kind of being molded, and then winning and losing has something to do with that too.
And just a last one for me, Coach. Jameis, we didn't really talk about Jameis. Really, for the typical fan who just loves Jameis, sees the growth, but sees that, hey, maybe he's still even toward the bottom of the NFC South quarterbacks. It's so competitive. What's his next step this year? What really is the next level for Jameis? You see him every day.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to look at it, is everyone, including me and including him, I mean, Jameis, he wants to be great. He wants to be the best. But there's 32 teams. Just think about the quarterbacks in our division. The last two MVPs, plus Drew Brees, who's won a Super Bowl, and, Jameis, he's got his hands full just being the best quarterback in our division. You know what's really great about Jameis is, even though he has his personal goals that he's working towards, Jameis is unique in that, whether it's his dad, how he was raised, his folks, his family, or through Jimbo of Florida State, Jameis is very genuine in wanting to win. He puts winning above all else, no matter how it looks. He puts winning first, and I appreciate that about him. So I think the next step, if you really ask Jameis, I mean, sure, he'd like to be higher on the NFL top 100. I'm sure he'd love to be the MVP someday, but Jameis wants to get us in the playoffs and win a Super Bowl first and foremost. So that's what our team – that makes it easier for me because I know he's motivated by that. If we wanted to go out and throw for 5,000 yards, I'm confident we could throw for 5,000 yards, but I can't guarantee you we'd win any more games.
Sure. We appreciate it. Did Arthur Blank call you Dirk, or did he call you Doug, or did he know your name?
I'm going to tell you guys a good Arthur Blank story after we get off the air.
All right. All right, thanks, sir.